A man drives a wagon through an old west town. Text, RHI Entertainment presents. An Alpine Lady in production. In association with Larry Levinson Productions. Six horses pull a stagecoach. Title, Love's Unfolding Dream. The driver stops the stagecoach.
Here we go.
Two men enter carrying bags. The stagecoach moves again. Children play near a one-room schoolhouse. The teacher rings the bell.
Come on, children, bring the others over. Okay, here we go.
Maddie, Jacob, inside.
The kids go inside. A young woman approaches a girl who is crying. The teacher walks over.
Emily, what happened?
I fell off the swing and broke my arm.
I fell off swings a lot when I was little.
Did you hurt your arm?
My arm, my leg, my finger.
Twice.
My nose.
You fell a lot.
She sure did.
Can you wiggle your fingers?
Emily wiggles her fingers.
You know what? You didn't break your arm. Just bruise it a little.
Can I go back to school?
Sure can. Just wash that up, okay?
The teacher looks at the woman.
You are a natural-born caretaker, Lindy.
Because I can tell a bruise from a broken bone.
Because you can make people feel better when they're hurt and scared.
Just like you.
They smile as Belinda walks away. Belinda runs through town to the sheriff's office. They meet on the porch.
Lindy, what brings you into town?
Came to get my newspapers, and I thought I asked my best fella to take me lunch at the hotel.
One of these days, somebody else is going to be your best fella. And I'm going to get just a little jealous.
There may be another fellow in my life someday. Will you always be the best, Papa?
That's worth the best meal the hotel has to offer. How'd you get to be so clever to wrap me around your little finger? By the way, I hear Dr. Jackson is looking for a new assistant.
You mean it?
Absolutely.
I better get down there before somebody else gets the job.
What about lunch?
Another time, Papa.
She runs away holding her hat on her head.
So much for being her best fellow.
A man holding flowers carefully opens a cabin door and steps inside smiling. He quietly crosses the room toward a woman sitting with her back to him near a window. She stands up from her sewing work.
Clark, you startled me.
She smiles and takes the bouquet.
What are these for?
Nothing in particular.
Maybe I just wanted to give my beautiful wife some flowers.
Mr. Davis, you do turn my head.
I'm about to steal a kiss.
You want to steal?
They kiss as two boys enter the house.
Grandma?
Grandpa?
Did you get all the eggs?
You know the Reds have a habit of laying in the barn. Did you check there?
No.
Stop lollygagging around. Come on, get to it.
Yes, sir.
The boys leave, and the couple smiles at each other. Belinda runs past a wagon to the doctor's house. A sign on the door says qualified medical assistant needed. Inquire within. The door opens.
Dr. Jackson, I'm here for the assistant position.
Oh, would you just hold on there, Belinda? I can't hire you.
But I know sutures and basic first aid. I even learned a new wrapping technique for sprains that Dr. Usler recommends.
Where'd you learn that?
I read his book. I've read a lot of medical books and newspaper articles. Everything I can get my hands on.
Reading a few books doesn't make you qualified. Without proper medical training, all that book knowledge is useless.
But I can learn. I already know more than anyone in Anderson Corner.
Well, I don't doubt it. But what I need is someone with solid patient experience.
This is all I've ever wanted to do with my life. I can learn so much from you, Doc.
Women aren't supposed to be doctors. What about marriage?
I'm not getting married.
Ever?
Well, Doc, I'm...
Women are meant to marry and have children, which is exactly what you'll do when the right man comes along. Trust me. Marriage and a career in medicine never work.
I'm not giving up. Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell applied to 29 schools before she got accepted into Geneva College.
Elizabeth Blackwell is the exception, not the rule. Now, Geneva College may accept your application, but I won't. Good day. Come on.
He drives away in his wagon, leaving her on the porch. The sign on the house says Micah Jackson, MD. She slowly sits on the steps. Clark Davis drives his wagon to the sheriff's office. He jumps down and goes inside.
Hey.
Hey.
Clark, what can I do for you?
I just came into town to pick up some supplies from the general store. I thought I would stop by to see if the five of you would like to come out to dinner tonight.
Well, that sounds good. I'm always happy to eat at your house instead of mine.
Oh, really?
Well, not that Missy's cooking isn't good. It's interesting.
It's all right, Zach. I love my daughter dearly, but I have to admit, she does not take after her mama when it comes to cooking.
A young man in a suit enters.
Excuse me, Sheriff.
What can I do for you?
I'm Drew Simpson. My uncle was Hank Simpson.
Hank was a fine man. My condolences.
Well, thank you, Mr.
Davis. Clark Davis. Our place is next to Hank's. He was a good neighbor.
Unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to meet Uncle Hank. Living so far away and all.
Where are you from?
New York City.
New York City. I bet that's a sight different than our little town.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, it's much bigger. And a little bit more cultured and sophisticated. This place is clearly rather rustic.
Rustic.
Anyway, the stage driver suggested I ask you for directions to my uncle's place.
I can do better than that. Got my buckboard right outside. I'll take you out there myself.
Oh, that's awful kind of you, Mr. Davis. Sheriff?
Good day.
Clark and Drew ride past an old barn into a small wooden house. Clark's mouth hangs open when he sees the house. Clark stops the wagon. He hands Drew the reins.
Hold me.
Drew furrows his brow and moves forward on his seat.
Water settled in. After your uncle passed, I'm afraid they didn't take care of your place properly.
I hoped it would be in good enough shape to sell right away.
You're not saying.
Certainly not.
Drew gets out of the wagon and joins Clark on the porch. The house has no doors or windows. Drew steps over something and walks inside. Broken furniture and tumbleweed litter the floor.
Take a set of work to make it presentable. Pack rat's gonna settle into those walls if you don't get those holes patched up.
You know anyone I could hire to do that?
You don't want to do the work yourself?
I just graduated from law school. I know all about writs and torts and the right of habeas corpus, but nothing about working on a farm.
I'd be happy to help you.
Would you? Well, thank you. I'll pay you, of course.
Oh, it's mighty generous, but no thanks.
I can't let you work for nothing, Mr. Davis.
You'd be allowing me to repay a debt to a good friend.
Then I accept.
Good.
We are outside the schoolhouse.
Please sit down. Thank you. It's great that you could come in today. I really appreciate it. It's no problem. It's nice to see you. We haven't had a chance to talk since you moved here, Mrs. Kent.
Please call me Sadie.
Caleb is a bright boy, but he's very behind for his age, especially in his reading and writing. He isn't doing his homework, and he said that you and his father won't help him with it.
I'm afraid my husband Charles don't hold much with schoolwork.
I'm sure you understand the importance of a good education.
I know how bad it feels when you don't have one. I only got through the second grade before I had to stay home with my mom, take care of the younger kids.
Sadie looks down at a book in her hands.
The fact is, I can only read a few words in this paper.
So it's not that you won't help him, it's just that you can't.
Sadie nods her head.
What about your husband?
He can't read at all.
I will spend some extra time with Caleb. But with 14 students of different ages and grades, it's going to be difficult.
Thank you, Mrs. Tyler. I appreciate anything you can do for me.
Sadie, I could teach you how to read, and then you could help Caleb to learn.
I have to go, Mrs. Tyler.
Sadie hurries out, and Missy looks down in deep thought. At home, Missy and Belinda set the table.
I should have figured it out.
The Kens have kept it themselves since they moved into town. Couldn't have known, Mama.
Well, the signs were all there. I just missed them.
Two boys come home.
Hey, Mom, here's this. What's your dinner?
Brunswick stew. And it's almost ready, so you boys go and wash up for supper.
One boy opens the pot and smells it. He looks at his brother, who frowns.
Can we go to Grandma and Grandpa's for dinner?
Not tonight. Go do what your mama said.
Missy puts her hand on her hip.
What does Charles Kent do?
Well, George has hired him on part-time at the general store. He does other odd jobs. Mostly wants to get a farm for himself.
How did you get all that out of him?
Well, I asked him.
He doesn't seem very talkative to me.
Well, generally, when the sheriff asks questions, people give answers.
Mrs. Kent will learn how to read. A whole new world would open up for her. Just like it did for me, Mom, when you taught me how to read.
Well, she'd become a different person.
Well, maybe that's what her husband's afraid of.
What kind of woman allows her husband to dictate to her that way?
I wouldn't know, Lindy. I haven't had any experience with that kind.
And you never will, Zachary Tyler.
Zachary and Missy smile and share a kiss. Belinda drives the wagon and is stopped by some men.
Miss! Hello, miss!
Is there a doctor in town?
Yes, you heard?
No, not me. My employer, Mrs. Stafford Smythe, has grown gravely ill. We were on the stagecoach passing through when Mrs. Stafford Smythe became ill. I fear for her life.
I didn't think she'd make it, miss.
How long has she been like this?
An hour or so, miss.
Belinda rushes Mrs. Stafford Smythe and the men to the doctor in her wagon.
Whoa, whoa. Doc, I got a patient for you.
Dr. Jackson grabs his stethoscope.
All right, bring her over here on the table.
They carry her.
Put her right here. All right, that's it. All right.
Watch your head.
Watch your head. All right. Okay.
Breathing is fine. Pulse is steady. Her skin's claiming to the touch, Doc.
Mrs. Stafford Smythe began slurring. Her words and her sentences didn't make sense. Then she collapsed.
You've been drinking?
Of course not. Mrs. Stafford Smythe has an occasional glass of sherry, but she is a lady.
How long y'all been traveling?
We left Beacon Hill nearly 2 weeks ago.
What's she doing out here?
Visiting friends in Denver. The Montgomerys, a very prominent family.
Do you think she had a stroke, Doc?
Why would you say that?
I read about the symptoms in Grey's Anatomy.
Can you help her, Doctor?
Well, unfortunately, I have another patient, possibly a breech birth.
But you can't leave Mrs. Stafford Smythe.
Well, there's nothing I can do for her until she comes to. And she seems fairly stable, and there's only one of me, and my other patient's situation is urgent. So if you can just watch out for her until I get back.
I'll say, Doc.
I don't have much choice, do I? All right, just make sure she's comfortable and keep a close eye on her. And I'll get back as soon as I can.
Belinda looks at the non-responsive woman lying on the table. Missy takes books out of her wagon and walks to a door. Sadie opens the curtain and sees Missy.
Mrs. Tyler?
Hi, Sadie. I just wanted to talk to you about...
Charles Kent scowls.
My boy in trouble at school?
Oh, no. No, nothing like that. I just stopped by to bring some books for Mrs. Kent that I thought she might be interested in.
You asked her for books?
No, she didn't. It's just... I thought that...
Well, you thought wrong. She got no use for books here. Now, if you got a job you're offering, it's a different story.
Oh, I'm afraid not.
He closes the door without another word. Missy's mouth is in a grim line as she turns away. Mrs. Stafford Smythe opens her eyes with Belinda and the employee at her side.
Dr. Jackson, she's awake!
Heavens, Jay!
Get up. Mrs. Stafford Smythe, Mrs. Stafford Smythe, my name is Dr. Jackson. And I believe you've had a stroke.
My photos, coach.
All right, Miss
Banks.
Calm down. Calm down. This is not good for you, ma'am.
To have Paulus left.
I have your bag, madam, right here. All your things are inside.
She relaxes and falls back asleep.
Our speech has obviously been impaired.
Well, I don't think it's as bad as it could have been. Hopefully, the slurring will diminish pretty quickly and she'll regain coherent speech.
There's some paralysis on her right side, but her left side seems unaffected. As soon as she's well enough, I could help her do some movement therapy. I read they're having good results with that.
Well, she will need someone with her constantly until we get better grasp of her physical limitations.
I won't leave her side, Doctor.
It should be someone with at least rudimentary medical knowledge.
Belinda stares at him.
Belinda, I don't want you to misinterpret this as a permanent job offer, young lady. I haven't changed my mind about women in medicine.
So I'd be like your assistant?
Not exactly. You will help Mrs. Stafford Smythe with her movement therapy. That is all.
I accept.
She smiles. Dr. Jackson doesn't smile back. Mist hangs over the mountains. Drew dismounts a horse and ties it to the porch of the doctor's house. He rubs his backside as he walks to the door. Dr. Jackson looks up from a book.
Oh, good morning. Something I can do for you, son?
Well, yes, I got this problem.
Mm-hmm.
A carbuncle that is driving me crazy.
Mm.
And you see, the area that's affected has been getting a good deal of sitting time, if you know what I mean.
Oh, so you're trying to tell me you got a boil on your backside.
Drew nods.
Well, bend over the table there and drop your drawers. We'll have a look.
He walks to the table and unbuttons his pants. Dr. Jackson raises his eyebrows.
No, that is a mean-looking carbuncle you got there, all right. would you bring me some of that writer's liniment that's on the top shelf in there? Would you stop rubbing?
I can't help it.
Well, the more you scratch it, the itchier it gets.
Here you go, Doc.
Oh, hey now. Whoa. Wait, never mind.
Well, what about your carbuncle?
What carbuncle?
Well, at least take the liniment. Belinda.
Belinda throws it and Drew catches it. He walks backward to the door.
Doctor.
Belinda chuckles.
You see, that's another reason I can't hire a woman. How am I going to make my money with you scaring away my patients?
She holds her mouth open but says nothing. Her face falls. Zach Tyler chops wood.
Well, what do you think?
Let me get this straight. You want to hire Sadie to help you at school so you can teach her to read without her husband knowing?
It's an ingenious plan, if you ask me.
And just what will you have her do?
Whatever needs to be done. She can sweep the floors, clean the blackboards, keep the wood stove burning. Simple things that allow her to learn along with the children.
Don't you think the way you're going about this is just a little sneaky?
I think the Lord will forgive my methods if I can offer this poor woman a path out of the darkness of ignorance.
She raises her chin and walks away from him. He looks back and raises his eyebrows. Belinda sets the table.
Mindy, how long is Doc going to let you stay on at the clinic?
As long as Mrs. Stafford Smith needs me. After that, Doc says I get the boot.
You will prove yourself so indispensable that he will never want to let you go.
That's the idea.
Belinda narrows her eyes.
Grandma, there's one too many plates for the table. We have a guest joining us for supper.
Clark and Drew enter.
Hey. Come on in, young man. Let me introduce you to everyone. This is my wife, Marty.
Hi.
Hi.
His daughter, Missy.
How do you do?
And this is my granddaughter, Belinda. Lindy, this is Mr. Drew Simpson. He inherited Hank's place, and he's come here all the way from New York City.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Simpson. I trust your journey here hasn't left you suffering any adverse effects.
Nothing worth speaking of.
She grins.
Well, I'm sure we're all very interested in hearing about your journey.
I know I am.
Drew smiles at her.
Yeah.
Come here. We're having a simple dinner, but fried chicken, I hope you like it.
They join hands.
Lord, we thank you for the food that's in front of us, the family that surrounds us, and the new friend that's joined us at our table. Amen.
Amen.
Jacob, honey, guess first.
Would you like a biscuit, Mr. Simpson?
Thank you.
I'm very sorry about your uncle. He was a wonderful man.
Belinda spent quite a bit of time with him these last few weeks. She nursed him right to the very end.
That was very kind of you.
Well, Lindy's a natural caretaker. In fact, she's working in town with Doc Jackson.
I hope to be a doctor someday.
Oh, that's rather unusual, isn't it?
Pardon me?
A woman doctor. It doesn't seem quite appropriate.
Appropriate?
Why would a lady want to subject herself to such a mentally and physically taxing line of work?
Oh, boy.
I would think being from New York City, you'd have a more enlightened view of women.
And by enlightened, I assume you mean a view that agrees with yours?
Ladies are every bit as capable as practicing medicine as men are. I could recommend several recent newspaper articles for you to read. That is, if you're open to being educated.
I think you'll find the majority of men uncomfortable being tended to by someone of the weaker sex.
That's true. Some men might be so intimidated that they run away in embarrassment.
I'm just saying that, like most men, when I marry, I'll need my wife at home. She'll have enough to do just taking care of me and our children.
I'm sure she will.
More potatoes, anyone?
Yes.
Please.
Belinda looks at her family. A horse is tied to the doctor's porch. Belinda dries her hands inside.
You're awake. Good. How are you feeling, Mrs. Stafford Smith?
Tired.
She sits up in bed. Belinda puts a pillow behind her.
No, don't need help.
Your speech is better today.
But not my arm.
With movement therapy, it's possible to regain use of your arm. Like this.
Don't touch.
Belinda lets go of her arm. The employee enters.
You're awake, madam. This is wonderful.
Don't fuss over me, Winter.
Oh, sorry, madam.
We should let her get some rest.
Of course, miss. I'll be in the next room, madam. I won't leave you.
I know you won't, Winter.
Winter smiles at her. She closes her eyes. Drew and Clark build a fence.
That'd be a great disadvantage if you hadn't been available to help me fix up the place, Mr. Davis. I never got it good enough to sell.
Glad to do it.
Drew holds barbed wire.
Be careful now, you don't catch yourself on a rusty wire. Hold on.
Take a look at it.
Let's see it. No, it's nothing.
Let's see
it. Drew's palm bleeds. Clark ties a rag around it.
I think the one thing you don't mess around with is rusted wire. You get a nasty infection. I want you to go into town. I want you to see the doc.
I'm fine, really.
Go on now. I mean it. You don't mess with rust in a gut. I'll finish up here.
Yes, sir.
Clark watches him leave.
Whoa.
Drew and his horse arrive at the doctor's place. Belinda glances at the window and pulls the curtain aside. Drew ties his horse to the porch. Belinda meets him at the door.
Afternoon, Mr. Simpson.
Good afternoon, Miss Tyler. I came to see Dr. Jackson about my hand.
He's out checking on patients. Why, what's wrong?
A little run-in with a rusty wire. When do you expect the doctor to return?
Not for hours.
She takes his hand.
Rusty wire? Tetanus can take hold pretty quick. Might end up losing the hand.
I think you're exaggerating.
I understand that you're uncomfortable being tended to by the weaker sex. But unless we clean that wound immediately, it might be too late. Lockjaw could set in by tonight. Although that may not be the worst thing.
He chuckles.
All right. How much humble pie do I have to eat to persuade you to help me?
Just enough to make me believe that you sincerely regret saying that I have no business becoming a doctor.
I most sincerely regret it.
Come inside.
He closes the screen door and follows her.
My grandpa tells me you went to Columbia University. You didn't mention that the other day at dinner.
I guess I could have worked that in when you offered to recommend articles to help enlighten me.
That would have been a good time. You're so fortunate to have the opportunity to study at Columbia.
I suppose that's true.
I can't be a doctor without the proper education. Most hospitals won't even consider me for a nursing position. But the proper education requires a great deal of money. I've been saving for a long time.
He winces.
I'm sorry if it stinks.
Oh, no, it's all right. Actually, you've been very gentle.
He smiles up at her as she wraps his hand.
There. You're all set. Remember to keep the wound clean.
At the risk of bringing up an old argument, I must say that you're a bright and beautiful young woman.
Beautiful?
Yes.
She looks down and smiles.
Anyway, you'll surely be married before long. Why would you want to waste your time preparing for a career that you'll have to leave?
Why does every man assume that I'm on a hunt for a husband?
Isn't that the goal? Find a mate, settle down, have children?
As a lawyer, everything is black or white to you, isn't it?
Well, that's rather simplistic. But there is a clear-cut sense of right and wrong in the law that I've come to appreciate.
That's why we're different. I see all of God's colors. And somewhere between black and white is my dream to be a doctor.
She raises one eyebrow as she cleans her hands.
I should get back to the ranch.
Of course. Please tell my grandpa I said hello.
He grins and nods. He looks back at her as he takes his hat from a peg. He walks out the door. She smiles to herself.
Those sheets are rough.
They're all I've got.
That cot is like sleeping on a board. And the draft in here practically blows the blanket off my legs. How long until I can leave?
You can move to the hotel today, Mrs. Stafford-Smythe. If Belinda will stay with you, can you do that?
But I thought I'd continue to work here with you.
Mrs. Stafford-Smythe needs a nurse. I thought that's what you wanted to be.
Actually, I want to be a doctor.
It's all settled then.
He walks away, and the patient looks at Belinda. Sheriff Zach Tyler rides his horse to the schoolhouse.
D-A-C-I-S-I-O-N.
He smiles at Missy.
I think that's recess. You're dismissed. You want me to keep an eye on Mrs. Tyler? Yes, thank you, Sadie.
Sadie goes out with the kids. Zach shuts the door.
Is everything all right?
I forgot your lunch today.
Oh, you are so sweet to bring it. I am starving. Thank you.
He gives her the lunch and they kiss.
Saw Charles Kent this morning. He told me Sadie really enjoys working here.
She is learning more and more every day. She's already ahead of Caleb. Now she can help him with his work.
I know how much you want to help Sadie, but Charles is a proud man.
Pride is a man's downfall, Zach.
All I'm saying, Missy, is that he won't take it too well if he finds out she's doing something behind his back. I'll see you tonight.
Bye.
She smiles at him.
Thanks, Tyler.
Mrs. Stafford Smythe is in bed at the hotel.
Winter, is this the best room the hotel has to offer?
I'm afraid so, madam.
I suppose it's a step up from the clinic. Still, these pillows are much too flat. They'll never do. And surely they got better linen.
She sniffs the blanket.
Oh.
I'm mortified by these inferior accommodations, but I'm afraid it's not possible to get anything better in this uncivilized outpost.
She scowls and hits the mattress. Belinda arrives.
Oh, Miss Tyler, please come in.
He takes her bag.
Madam, I'll just be down in the restaurant to check on your tea.
Wash the china yourself, Windsor. I don't trust these people to have high standards of cleanliness.
Yes, ma'am.
He goes out, and Belinda smiles brightly.
Stanford Smith.
How do you think I'm feeling, being forced to endure these primitive conditions?
You know, we're not all uncivilized here.
Really? Did I somehow miss seeing the opera house, or a good library, or even a hat shop with the latest fashions from Europe? No? I thought not.
Anderson Corner has other things to offer.
Such as?
Good people, and a church that welcomes everybody, including strangers. And we take care of each other in difficult times.
You've never even been outside this small town, have you?
Actually, I was born in New York. I didn't come here until I was 14. So I do know a few things about the world outside. But I much prefer Addison Corner.
You actually like it here.
Compared to New York, it's heaven on earth. I'm gonna miss it terribly when I leave to study to be a doctor.
Well, now there's a surprising ambition for a farm girl.
I believe it's what God called me to do.
God? Ha! Don't put your trust in God, young woman. He is unconcerned with your ambitions.
You don't mean that.
The patient sits up.
The only thing you have to rely on in this world is yourself.
I must be awful lonely believing in nothing but myself.
When you've had a little experience with the harsh realities of life, you'll abandon that naive faith.
I've had a great deal of experience of harsh reality. Without my faith, I'd expect I'd be much like you.
How's that?
Very unhappy.
Mrs. Stafford Smythe opens and closes her mouth, but no words come out. Drew rides his horse to Belinda's house, where she is reading a book.
Whoa.
She looks at him and brushes a lock of hair from her cheek. He ties his horse to the porch.
Hello.
Hi.
Marty comes outside holding a basket.
Drew. I'm so glad you could join us for supper. Belinda, I need some eggs, please.
All right, Grandma.
She pushes the basket into Drew's hands.
Everyone here works for their supper.
He raises his eyebrows, and she lifts one corner of her mouth. She picks up an egg.
Might as well spit it out.
What?
Whatever it is you're stewing over.
I apologize for being so opinionated and outspoken.
You probably can't help it.
Can you?
Not to save my life.
Truce?
Truce?
They shake hands.
Truce.
They hold hands for a moment, and they smile. Belinda helps Mrs. Stafford Smythe exercise at the hotel.
Now remember, as I'm moving your arm, gotta imagine you're doing it on your own, okay?
I saw you reading late into the night last night.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Did light keep you awake?
My age keeps me awake.
I'll turn the light out earlier tonight.
Must have been a very interesting book to keep you awake at that hour.
Oh, it is. It's called The Laws of Life, and it's written by Dr.
By Elizabeth Blackwell.
You know of her?
I heard her speak in Boston. She's a very intelligent woman.
Can't imagine what it must be like to hear her speak in person.
You sound like you greatly admire her.
She's done so much to pave the way for women to become doctors.
And that's what you want to be.
I'll be fortunate if I'm able to train to be a nurse.
Belinda shrugs.
The schooling for doctors is terribly expensive.
She notices Mrs. Stafford Smythe moving her arm by herself. The patient suddenly loses strength and drops her arm.
You moved your arm?
Your powers of observation are remarkable.
It's cause for a cup of tea. Now imagine this is your favorite Earl Grey. See if you can lift your arm enough to take it.
What, like a dog doing tricks?
Like a woman who wants her independence back.
You are a very impertinent young woman.
And you are a very difficult patient. If you apply your willfulness to your therapy, you might get better.
She holds the teacup out to her patient. Mrs. Stafford Smythe struggles to lift her arm and cannot do it. Belinda's hopeful expression fades. She holds the cup.
We'll try again in the morning.
The older woman leans her head on the window. Sadie sweeps the schoolroom.
When you're done, you can go.
She smiles at Missy, who works at her desk. Sadie looks at a book on the desk.
Who is Charles Dickens? A very talented author. You can borrow the book if you like.
Oh, no, thank you. I'll see you tomorrow, Mrs. Tyler.
All right.
Missy smiles to herself as Sadie leaves. She goes back to writing. Wagons move through town. The shopkeeper eats candy as Missy's sons enter.
Oh, boys, what can I do for you?
Mom needs some flour.
All right, what kind?
The boys look at each other.
She usually has wheat.
Wheat's good.
Yeah. All right.
He grabs his side.
Ah!
You okay, Mr. Brown?
He falls down.
Oh!
Mr. Brown!
Ah!
Dad, Mr. Brown is ill!
Sheriff Seth runs into the store.
George?
He helps George limp into the doctor's office.
Doc, George needs to have you take a look at him. He's got a pain that's got, he can't even stand up straight.
Okay. Get him up there on the table and have a look at him.
He touches George's head.
You've been vomiting, huh?
Yeah.
Belinda looks at the doctor.
Oh, you don't have a fever. You've been into the candy again?
Well,
yeah, I thought so.
Ah! I gotta get back to the office. If you need anything, let me know, Doc.
All right, thanks, Hank.
Hi, Daddy.
Dr. Jackson points across the room.
Would you get my watch over there on the desk, Belinda? Take his pulse.
She holds the watch on George's wrist.
Checking for rebound tenderness?
Well, if you're so smart, what am I doing now?
Use McBurney's point method to diagnose what's wrong. 125.
And I suppose you have an opinion.
I think he has acute appendicitis. He probably needs surgery.
If he has an appendicitis attack, it's not bad enough to warrant surgery.
But if his appendix were to burst, Doctor...
Burst?
Just calm down, George. There's nothing to worry about now. You can get up.
All right.
Look, if you get a fever or if the pain gets considerably worse, you come and see me. And it's in the middle of the night.
He grabs a vial.
You take a teaspoon of this 3 times a day till the pain goes away. And, George, you stay out of that candy jar. You're a grown man, not a 5-year-old.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Much obliged.
George lowers his eyes at Belinda. She frowns back. He struggles out the door. Dr. Jackson removes his glasses and looks at Belinda.
Now, listen here, young lady. A good doctor never performs an unnecessary surgery. It's too risky. Unless the patient will die without it.
But he had all the symptoms.
If he had acute appendicitis, George would have been right off this table from the pain. Might even have passed out. Probably has nothing worse than a simple stomach ache.
He shakes his head and turns away. She looks down. It's nighttime outside Sadie's house. Her son sits at the table.
Mom, what's this word?
She stops cooking to look at his book.
Capture.
And this one?
Elephant. It says, then they went out to capture the wild elephant.
Her husband enters carrying wood.
How do you know what that says, Sadie?
Her smile fades.
Mom was learning to read at school with me, Pa. It's real good.
Charles drops the wood and stares at her coldly. She looks at the closed door and then puts her hands on Caleb's shoulders. Horses stand along the fence at Drew's house. Drew and Clark sit on the floor.
Oh, you sure are a lucky man to have a wife who cooks like Marty does.
I am blessed, that's for sure. I thank God every day that he saw fit to put me and Marty together.
When did you first know you loved her?
That's easy. When I thought I'd never see her again. I felt a terrible emptiness inside of me. And I knew that if I didn't get her back, nothing would ever fill that up again.
It's a pretty clear sign.
I thought so.
Clark sits back and looks at him.
What about you, though? Tell me about that life you gotta get back to. You got a young lady waiting for you?
No. My father thought I should concentrate on school before getting serious about anybody.
He may be right.
He's always right.
Sounds like a man who's pretty sure of himself.
If he's ever had a moment's doubt, he hasn't admitted it.
Considers it a weakness, I'll bet.
Yeah. He says if someone senses weakness in you, that's when they go in for the kill.
Yeah, that's a pretty harsh way to look at life.
Probably true. In a legal battle, anyway.
Clark lays a board on the floor. He sets down a hammer. He grabs a biscuit.
We can both go up on that roof. You can find a way to hurt yourself again. Or you can take the wagon into town and pick up those supplies that we ordered.
That's an easy choice, sir.
Drew grabs his hat and gloves and exits the house. Clark takes a seat and leans back to rest with his arms folded. Sheriff Zach greets townspeople. He sees Charles loading a wagon.
Charles.
Yeah?
Heard what happened with your wife.
I mean your wife? She tricked me.
I'm not apologizing for Missy. She was acting out of kindness and with the honest intent to help.
I don't see how this has anything to do with you, Sheriff. Unless there's some new law about reading that I don't know about.
You know, Charles, there's no shame in not being able to read. The shame is from not even trying.
Zach tips his hat at him.
Hey.
Charles watches Zach walk away and continues loading the wagon. Belinda works with Mrs. Stafford Smythe at the hotel.
I know it hurts, but that's a good sign. It means your nerves are kicking back in. If you just try a little bit harder.
I am trying.
You're giving up too easily.
Who do you think you are to talk to me that way? An ignorant, low-class girl in a godforsaken town in the middle of nowhere.
I may not have a college education, but I'm well-read and definitely not ignorant.
She stands.
And as for class, I come from a good family, could teach you a few things about what that word really means.
Get out of my sight.
With pleasure.
Belinda stomps to the door. Windsor opens it holding tea. She squeezes past him. Mrs. Stafford Smythe glowers. He sits the tea down and leaves.
Windsor!
She frowns and sighs. Belinda leaves the hotel. She looks both ways and walks to her right. Windsor follows her.
Miss Belinda! Miss Belinda, please, wait up! Wait up, Miss Belinda! Miss Belinda!
She turns.
I'm sorry, Mr. Windsor. I know you're taking her abuse, but I'm not about to.
Mrs. Stafford Smythe would never mean to be abusive to you, miss.
I don't know what you call it back east, but out here we call it rude and unacceptable behavior.
May I share something of a personal matter with you, Miss Tyler? Something I'd like to show you.
He holds a photo.
This is Benjamin and Lucy, Mrs. Stafford Smythe's children.
I thought she didn't have any children.
Well, she doesn't now.
Belinda's mouth falls open.
Oh, I see.
Mrs. Stafford Smythe became a widower shortly after Lucy was born, and her children became everything in her likeness.
What happened to them?
Lucy passed away when she was 5 of the scarlet fever, and Benjamin drowned just before he was to graduate from Harvard.
Terrible.
When Mrs. Stafford Smythe lost Lucy, the only thing that kept her going was Benjamin. And when she lost him, I was afraid she...
So sorry. That explains your anger and bitterness, but... That doesn't excuse your behavior.
I just want you to understand that Mrs. Stafford Smythe was not always the way she is. She was a kind, generous woman. Try to think of her the way she was before unbearable loss changed her. Try to see her with a forgiving heart and not a judgmental mind.
She brushes past him. He puts the photo in his coat pocket. She pauses before knocking on the patient's door. She turns around and takes a deep breath. She takes another breath. She nods her head. She turns back to the door.
Come in.
Mrs. Stafford Smythe sees Belinda and looks away.
What are you doing back here?
Belinda approaches her.
I want to apologize to you, Mrs. Stafford Smythe. It was inexcusable for me to speak to a patient like that. No matter how challenging you are.
This submissive demeanor is out of character for you. Does it have anything to do with Windsor rushing out after you?
He told me a little bit about your background, but please do not be angry with him.
He knows better than to discuss my private life.
He's devoted to you. The only reason he told me is because he believes you need me.
I don't need anyone to help me.
We all need someone.
Belinda smiles and sits on the bed.
I lost my mother, father, and baby sister. When I was 9, my little brother Jacob and I had to go live in an orphanage.
How did you get here?
On an orphan train. They go from town to town, giving kids to whoever want them. Sometimes they're good families and sometimes they're not. If it wasn't for Missy and Zach, me and Jacob would be separated forever.
I'm sorry for you, Belinda. But now you know why I turned from God.
No, I don't.
How can you
you still have faith.
I know we never really died. I'm connected to the people I love in life, and I know we're still connected in death.
A comforting thought if you can believe in fairy tales, which I can't.
Belinda looks at her somberly.
That's enough for today. You may go.
She doesn't look at Belinda. Belinda stands to leave the room. When she gets to the door, she glances back. She leaves. Belinda rides across a field and stops at Drew's house. She dismounts and ties the horse to the porch. She enters the house holding a bundle.
Hi.
Drew turns.
Belinda.
I was visiting my grandma. She wanted me to bring lunch to y'all.
Well, your grandpa went into town to pick up some lumber. He should be back soon.
I'll just leave it here then.
She puts it down.
Wait.
She pauses.
Why don't you stay and visit a while?
I can't. I should be getting back to the clinic.
Well, I was thinking that maybe, we could have lunch at the hotel sometime.
I'd like that.
Tomorrow?
She pauses again.
Well.
She looks to the side and then grins.
Sure.
She walks out without looking at him. She gets on her horse, and her cape flies behind her as she rides. Drew walks onto the porch and leans on a post, smiling as he watches her go. Clouds move over a full moon. Clark secures his horses and goes to Charles's door. Charles opens the door.
Evening, Charles.
Evening, Mr. Davis.
Drew Simpson is fixing up his uncle's place. He could use some help. He'll pay you a good wage, and I thought you might be interested in the job.
Gonna work around my hours at the store?
You bet.
All right, then. I'll be there after lunch.
I'll see you then.
All right.
They shake hands.
Mr. Davis.
Clark turns to him.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate the work.
You're welcome, Charles. You're welcome.
The men nod. Charles smiles and shuts the door. Blue skies hang over the hotel. Belinda follows Mrs. Stafford Smythe in the dining room. She grabs her chair.
Thank you.
The women sit at a table.
I envy you your faith, Belinda, but I can't share it. And even if I could, it doesn't change the fact that the only reason I didn't let that stroke kill me is my distant relatives who are just waiting for me to die so that they can inherit my fortune.
I think the whole reason your stroke didn't kill you is because God has work for you. Find a purpose by loving other people.
And losing them.
The fact that you grieve deeply means you love deeply.
Belinda shakes her head.
There's so many people out there who need what you have.
Who would that be?
At the orphanage, there's hundreds of children without parents or parents who just simply give them away.
Ah, so you're suggesting I give money?
Not just money. Yourself. You have so much love to give and they need love.
The older woman avoids her gaze. Belinda pushes a teacup toward her.
Aren't we supposed to be practicing?
Mrs. Stafford Smythe closes her eyes.
Reach for the teacup.
She slowly moves her hands along the table.
One hand.
She keeps one hand still and reaches with her right hand. She clasps the cup with her fingers. She carefully moves the cup toward her, and the tea shakes. She lifts it toward her mouth. She takes a sip. Both women smile. She puts the cup down on the saucer.
Best cup of tea I ever had.
She smiles at Belinda. Charles and Drew work on a door frame.
Hold her right there.
Okay.
Charles hammers a nail into place.
That'll do it.
Thanks again, Charles. I'm not sure what I would have done without you.
You're more welcome, Mr. Simpson. Drew.
He moves past Charles.
All right. Drew.
Can I ask you a question about the law?
Sure.
Drew puts tools away.
About adoption.
You and your wife thinking about adopting a child?
Well, not exactly. Sadie was married before we met. Her first husband, it was Caleb's pa. But he was a real no account. He used to beat Sadie and Caleb both.
She divorced him?
Yeah. He got in a bar fight. Then he hurt some fella real bad. They put him in prison. Gave Sadie a chance to get away, but he's fixing to get out soon. And I know he's gonna come looking for Caleb. Now, if I can adopt him, does that make him my boy? And ain't nobody can take him away.
That's right.
Charles nods.
Sadie's awful worried that he won't give up his claim to Caleb.
Well, under normal circumstances, he'd have to agree to it. But because he's been in prison, there's no way the court would favor him over you.
You sure about that?
Well, I'll draw up the papers to petition the court. We'll see what the judge has to say.
Well, now, I can't pay you right now, but I...
You don't have to.
Well, I don't take charity.
Consider it part of your wages for working here. Like a bonus for doing a really good job.
Charles nods.
All right. Thank you, Drew.
It's my pleasure, Charles.
Drew eats with Belinda.
I just passed the bar.
I'll take those for you.
When I return home, I'll join my father's practice.
Does he practice criminal law?
Nothing nearly so unsavory. No, he handles mostly contracts, wills, trusts, that sort of thing. My father represents some of the wealthiest people in New York.
So you'll only be helping the rich people?
Well, that's who our clients are.
They don't have to be. You could help the less fortunate.
We work with people who pay our fees.
Is that all you care about? Money?
Don't be ridiculous. That's not what I meant.
It seems to me you don't have a real passion for law.
Well, the definition of law is reason free from passion.
He places money on the table.
Do you have time to take a walk?
I should be getting back to Miss Stafford tonight.
Short one.
She nods at him. He stands and pulls out her chair. She smiles at him. They walk together.
So do you really want to be a lawyer, or was it simply expected?
It was always understood that I would follow in my father's footsteps, yes.
What does your mother think? Doesn't her opinion matter?
Her opinion would matter a great deal if she was still alive. She died when I was 8.
Oh, I had no idea. I'm so sorry, Drew.
You know, for a long time after she died, I used to play this little game every time I left the house. I'd pretend that when I came home, she'd be there, hiding somewhere, waiting for me to find her. Of course, the only thing I ever found was the latest governess my father had hired. He gave me every material advantage I could ever hope for. The only thing I ever wanted was my mother to be there when I came home. You're privileged to have both your parents.
Actually, I was adopted.
I would have never guessed they're not really your family. I mean, nothing.
It's all right. First, I didn't feel like they were my family. And they made me realize that loving someone has nothing to do with being related. Everything to do with opening your heart and letting someone in.
I envy the relationship you have with your family.
Why?
You really love each other. I haven't felt that since my mother died. That sense of security, of knowing that...
Knowing that someone will always be there for you. And never be completely on your own again.
Yes.
He stops walking and shakes his head.
Exactly.
Dr. Jackson holds his hands near Mrs. Stafford Smythe's arm. The woman raises her arm and smiles.
You see?
He smiles at her. She closes her fist.
My, my, my. You have made remarkable progress, Mrs. Stafford Smythe. I must say I am very impressed. To be truthful, I wasn't sure you'd... regain use of your arm.
Nor did I think so, but Belinda was stubborn about my therapy. She'd listen to me grouse and complain, but she never gave up on me. She's a remarkable young woman, don't you think, Doctor?
Yes, yes, she is. Indeed, remarkable. I know you must be anxious to get back to Boston, and I think you can start planning to go home now.
Oh, thank you, Doctor.
He beams at her. Belinda sits at Marty's table.
So, what did you ride all the way out here to ask your grandma?
Seems while I wasn't looking, my life just got really complicated.
This wouldn't have anything to do with Drew Simpson, would it?
I'm attracted to him, and it's not fair.
To you or to him?
Both. He's becoming a distraction. I can't let that happen. Everything seems to be getting a lot harder all of a sudden. Only a few years ago, I knew just how to get answers to my questions.
You wish it was simple again, like when you were a child? You could say a heartfelt prayer to God and then just listen for his guidance.
Yes.
Belinda, it's still that simple.
Marty sips her tea. Belinda stares at her blankly. Charles fixes Drew's fence. Drew and Clark work on the floor.
Drew, you want to take a break?
What? Oh, no. I'm fine.
Clark watches Drew leaning on his hammer and staring ahead.
Something weighing on your mind?
No. Nothing. Have you ever had that experience where you think a person is one way and they turn out to be something else entirely?
I think we've all had that experience at one time.
In my head, Belinda, all figured out. Then I get thrown for a loop.
And that's bad.
Well, it's complicated. She makes me think about things I thought were all settled.
Such as?
Where I'm going to live, what I'm going to do, even whether or not my life has any real meaning or purpose.
A woman can do that to a man.
I know what I want to do with my life. I want to sell this place, go back to New York, go into my father's firm, get married, and raise a family.
Well, in that case, what is the problem?
Belinda is the problem. I don't want to think about her. I don't want to get involved with her. She's nothing like the kind of woman I have planned for my future. She wants a career in a man's field. She's opinionated, outspoken, strong-willed, smart, kind.
That doesn't sound like a problem, son. That sounds like an opportunity.
Drew rides his horse up to Dr. Jackson's house.
Whoa.
He ties the reins to a post. He glances at his hand. He straightens his clothes. He walks inside, and Dr. Jackson is there.
Is that your hand again?
It's my finger. I think it's broken.
Belinda walks in.
There ought to be a law against giving you a hammer, son.
For your information, the first time I hurt myself, it was on a wire.
Maybe you should stick to lawyering.
He examines Drew's finger. He notices Drew looking at Belinda.
Belinda, why don't you look at the boy's hand?
He carries a tray of medicine into another room. She steps forward and takes Drew's hand.
Can you bend it?
He squeezes her fingers.
I guess I can.
She yanks her hand away.
I think it's just a bruise. I can splint it if it's broken. It might be quite cumbersome.
Just leave it.
He leans forward.
Have lunch at the hotel with me today.
She glances toward the back room.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Tomorrow, then?
At Mrs. Stafford's mat to tend to.
He drops his gaze.
Well, maybe we can find time.
Do you want the splint?
What? No. No splint.
Then excuse me. I have work to finish.
She glares and turns away from him. He tilts his head and steps back. Dr. Jackson enters the room in time to see Drew leave. Drew stops at the door to look at Belinda. She glances over her shoulder at him. He closes the door and sits on the front porch. She walks outside and finds him there. He stands to his feet. She hurries on.
Belinda, wait.
I have to get home, Drew. I have things to do.
Why are you being like this? What happened?
I don't know what you mean.
Yes, you do.
When the farm sells, you'll be moving back to New York, right?
Well, yes.
And I'll be staying here. So where does that leave us? You'll go back to a life I can barely imagine. Meeting with rich clients in a big office. Going to fancy balls with orchestras. Dancing with well-bred girls in satin gowns.
She sits on her horse looking at him.
After a while, you won't even remember me.
Her eyes are teary.
Hand me that place.
He loosens the reins from the rail and hands them to her. He watches her back as she rides away. He turns his head. Belinda and her family eat dinner together. Her dad stands up.
Let's see. Hey, Charles.
Evening, Sheriff. Awful sorry to interrupt your family meal.
Would you like to join us, Charles?
No, thank you, ma'am. I just came to drop this by. It's for Miss Belinda.
Charles gives Zach a letter, which he hands to Belinda. She furrows her brow as she opens it.
Seems Drew hurt himself again. I better go check on him. I'll be back as soon as I can, Mom.
Thank you, Charles.
Sure.
She runs to her horse in the dark. She arrives at Drew's home. She peers through a window.
Drew?
Candles burn in sconces on the wall. She walks inside. Drew opens a wooden box.
What?
He turns to her.
I believe this belonged to my aunt. Probably meant a great deal to my uncle.
He holds his arms out to his sides.
This isn't a fancy ballroom. There isn't an orchestra.
She steps closer. He looks into her eyes and smiles.
But if I can have this dance, I promise you, Belinda, I will never forget it.
She smiles at him. He holds out his hand, and she takes it. They dance in the candlelit cabin. They stare into one another's eyes. She lays her head on his shoulder. He shuts his eyes. He accompanies her back to her door. She looks up at him.
You know this doesn't change anything, Drew.
I think it changes everything.
I should go in.
She smiles.
I'll see you tomorrow.
I don't think...
Tomorrow.
She looks down and closes the door. Belinda and Mrs. Stafford Smythe meet.
Dr. Jackson has given me the go-ahead to travel home to Boston.
I'm very happy for you, Mrs. Stafford Smythe. But I am going to miss you.
I'd like you to come with me, Belinda.
If you're worried about the traveling, Mr.
No, I'm not looking for a traveling companion. I'd like you to come back to Boston and live with me. Take me to that orphanage. I'd like to meet those children.
You don't need me to take you there. I'll just get you the name
of
the orphanage.
No, well, Belinda, there's more. I would like to pay your way through college and medical school. You shouldn't have to settle for small dreams. Dare to go for the big ones. You'll make a fine doctor, Belinda.
That's a much too generous offer, Mrs. Stafford Smythe. I'm afraid I can't accept it.
Why on earth not?
Because it'd take me years and years to pay you back.
Well, it's not a loan, it's a gift. I'm a very wealthy woman. I can afford to do this for you. I would like to think if my Lucy had lived, she might have grown up to be just like you, Belinda.
Even if I could accept your offer, they'd never accept me into a good college. I mean, most of the schools don't even allow women.
Oh, posh. I'll just send up a smoke signal to my friend Sam Gregory.
Dr. Sammy Gregory? The Dr. Sammy Gregory founded Boston University School of Medicine?
Yes, one and the same.
Belinda beams.
I don't know what to say.
Well, say yes.
Thank you, Mrs. Stafford Smythe. Thank you.
Now, I know that you'll need to talk this over with your family. But when I leave next week, I hope you'll be with me.
She sips her tea. Belinda can't stop smiling. She drinks her tea, too. Belinda talks with her mom and grandma.
I think it is the opportunity of a lifetime, Lindy. But Boston is very far away. I would certainly miss you.
And I'm gonna miss you. And Papa and Grandpa and Maddie and Jacob. I can't leave Jacob.
Oh, we'll take good care of him. Besides, we all knew that you were going to have to leave Anderson Corner one day if you were going to get a good education.
It scares me about thinking of leaving everyone.
When I came out here from back east, I was scared too.
So was I. When I left with my first husband, Willie, I had no idea what lay ahead. The only thing I knew was that I was leaving the only home I'd ever known.
How'd you both do it?
Missy looks at Marty.
When you face the unknown, you have to gather every ounce of courage you possess. And then tell yourself that if it's the right thing to do, everything will work out fine. And if it doesn't, you can always come home.
So you think I should go?
I think you should do what your mom and I both did. Pray about it.
And then decide.
Belinda's eyes are wide. Drew hammers a nail into a floorboard on his porch. Belinda rides up to him on horseback.
Belinda, what a wonderful surprise.
I can only say a moment, Drew. Something entirely unexpected has happened, and I wanted to let you know.
I hope it's something good.
Actually, it's amazing. Mrs. Stafford Smythe has asked me to go to Boston with her. She's going to put me through school.
That's incredible. I know what it must mean to you. You know Boston isn't that far from New York. Maybe we can...
That's just it, Drew. No, we can't.
Why not?
As soon as I get my medical degree, I'll be coming back here, practicing with Doc and hopefully taking over for him someday.
You may change your mind when you get to Boston. It has a great deal to offer.
It doesn't have what Anderson Corner does. My family, people who really need me. They probably won't have a doctor when Doc's gone.
Linda, we can work this
out. I've thought hard about this, Drew. I've prayed even harder. I'll never fit into your world. My life is here. The only way we could be together if one of us is miserable.
Belinda.
I said what I came here to say.
She turns to go.
Belinda.
He stands alone.
Belinda!
She keeps writing. Dr. Jackson removes a bone saw from a wooden box. He looks up as Belinda walks in. Her face is troubled. She walks toward him.
Who is it?
Jonas Barnes. Hurt his leg recently. Gangrene set in. It's gonna have to come off at the knee.
Will surgery save his life?
With gangrene? I don't know. But if I don't do it, he'll die within the day.
She observes the surgery tools he lays out.
I can help.
Linda, this is life-threatening, gruesome surgery.
I can handle it, Doc.
He looks at her soberly. A curtain surrounds the table where Jonas lies. Belinda looks at him and his wife. He breathes rapidly and his eyes are large. Dr. Jackson enters.
Cora, I need you to wait outside. I'll come and get you as soon as we're done.
She has tears in her eyes as she kisses Jonas. Lines mark her forehead. Jonas watches her leave.
All right, Jonas. I think we're ready to start.
Hey, maybe you could say a little prayer first.
Of course.
He nods at Belinda.
Belinda?
She shuts her eyes.
Lord, we are eternally grateful that you are here with us now, and pray that you bless Doc with a steady hand, and bless Jonas with a peaceful heart, and Cora with the knowledge that you are in control of this day. Amen.
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 All right. I need you to lay back there now. Everything's gonna be all right.
Belinda puts a mask over Jonas's nose.
Count to 10 with me, okay?
One.
Two.
Three.
Four.
Five.
Dr. Jackson holds Jonas's arm as it goes limp.
He's out.
He folds Jonas's hands over his abdomen. He lifts the sheet from the patient's decomposing leg. Belinda covers her nose with her sleeve. Cora tries to peek through the window. She gives up and takes a seat on the porch. She folds her hands and leans her face on them. Dr. Jackson places the saw above the leg. Belinda winces as she looks at Jonas. Cora prays on the porch. Belinda looks up at the doctor. A horse is tied up outside Charles and Sadie's house. Drew is inside.
This starts the process to make you legally Caleb's father. I'll just need you to sign there, and then I'll file the paper with the court.
You really think the judge will grant the adoption?
I can't guarantee it, but it should be an open and shut case.
He hands Sadie a pen. She dips it in the inkwell and writes her signature on the paper. Drew takes the pen.
Your turn, Charles.
Can I sign for Charles?
Well, I'm afraid not. You just put your ex right there.
Charles licks his lips. He holds the pen in his fist. He writes an ex.
There it is.
Drew smiles. The couple holds hands.
You know, you're my first client. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to be going.
Thank you so much, Drew. I really appreciate it.
You're more than welcome.
The men shake hands. Drew gathers his coat, hat, and bag.
Thank you, Sadie.
Sadie shuts the door behind him.
Charles, we haven't talked about what happened with Caleb, but I want to explain.
No, you don't have to, Sadie.
I'm sorry I went behind your back. But I don't understand why you don't want me to learn to read.
I reckon if you learned how to read, you'd see that there's a whole lot more out there than what I can give you and Caleb.
She takes his hand.
Charles, you are the finest man I've ever known. I don't know what Caleb and I would have done without you.
Oh, say, I love you both so much.
He rubs her cheek.
And I'd be mighty proud to give Caleb my name. But I wonder if he's going to be ashamed of me.
You know what would make your son proud of you, Charles? Seeing that his father had the courage to do something very hard, and all because he loves his son so much. If I can do it, I know you can, Charles.
He looks down.
It would be nice to be able to read that piece of paper since I'm Caleb's pa.
They glance at the table.
I think she might teach us together.
Sadie smiles. They hug, and he lifts her up. At Dr. Jackson's, Belinda dabs a rag on Jonas's face. He awakens.
What happened? Cora?
He tries to sit.
Cora.
You must run, Mr. Barnes. Mr. Barnes.
She can't keep him still. He falls to the floor.
Mr. Barnes!
She stares at his dressing. She strains to lift him up. Dr. Jackson rushes in.
What happened?
He got scared. He started asking for Cora. I tried to stop him, Doc. I'm so sorry.
All right, go get some bandages. Hurry.
She runs as Dr. Jackson attends to Jonas.
Back into bed now. Okay? Help me if you can.
He lifts Jonas into bed.
All right.
Jonas breathes heavily.
Calm down now. Just calm down.
He gasps for air.
It's gonna be all right. Jonas, it's gonna be all right. It's gonna be all right. Listen to me, Jonas, you have to relax. Jonas, shh, all right? Shh. You have to relax. Jonas.
His eyes close.
Oh, Jonas, please don't do it.
Oh. He takes his pulse. Belinda shakes her head. The doctor sighs and frowns as he holds the man's head. Belinda cries behind him. He lays Jonas's hands across him. He pulls the sheet over his head. Belinda watches in disbelief. She stumbles into her house.
Hi, Lindy.
Marty sees her weeping.
Boys, go outside, please.
She holds Belinda in her arms. Marty's eyes are troubled. Later, she dabs Belinda's eyes.
Poor dear.
My grandma really did. He was so strong. How could he be so strong after what he went through?
He was very frightened. Fear can do that.
I haven't seen anyone die since my mom and baby sister. So horrible to see the life drain out of him so fast.
I'm so sorry, darling.
It was so awful.
It wasn't your fault, Belinda.
She collapses into Marty's arms.
It's okay.
Marty strokes her hair. Belinda meets with Mrs. Stafford Smythe.
It must be hard on him to lose a patient he's tried so desperately to save. But once he gets past the sadness and frustration he must feel, he will tell you it wasn't your fault.
If it wasn't my fault, then why do I feel like it is?
Because you care deeply about people, and that's what makes you hurt for them. And that is also what will make you a good doctor.
I don't think I'm about to be a doctor after all. I'll just stay here and be Doc's assistant if you'll let me.
Belinda, you can't mean that.
I'm afraid I do.
No.
She turns and watches Belinda run away. Later, Mrs. Stafford Smythe and Windsor take a ride to Dr. Jackson's office. He is just leaving.
Hello, Mrs. Stafford Smythe.
Did you tell Belinda it was her fault that poor man died?
Of course not.
Did you tell her it wasn't?
He opens his mouth to speak.
Well, you don't mean that.
She nods at him.
I didn't think.
Exactly.
She sits back and looks at Windsor. They both look at Dr. Jackson, who takes a deep breath.
All right.
I'll do it.
Clark, Drew, and Charles step in front of Drew's house to assess their work.
I don't think you have any trouble finding a buyer now.
Drew turns to Clark.
I already know the buyer I want.
Drew looks at Charles.
Charles, would you and Sadie like to take this place?
Oh, we can never afford a place like this.
You could if I loaned you the money.
You never accept a loan that big.
What if we called it a mortgage? Except you can pay it off as you can. In a way, I owe you, Charles. You showed me how good it feels to practice the law when I'm helping someone who really needs it. So, Charles, what do you say? Can you take this place off my hands for me?
Yes. Yes, I will. Thank
you. You're welcome.
Charles throws his hat into the air. He smiles wide and shakes hands with Drew and Clark. At Dr. Jackson's, Belinda secures her horse to the post and ascends the porch steps. She walks in and removes her hat.
Doc? Doc, are you here?
She walks to his desk and sits down. She grabs a pen and paper and starts writing.
Dear Doc, I'm so sorry to have let you down, but you were right. I don't have what it takes to be a doctor.
In town, a woman rushes through the street carrying a child. Whoa. Drew sees her and stops his wagon.
Can I help?
She can barely breathe. We have to get her to Doc.
He takes the weak girl and lays her in the back of his wagon. The woman sits beside her.
Walter?
She closes her eyes and hugs the girl. Drew drives the wagon. Belinda is finishing her letter when they enter the doctor's place.
Where's the doctor?
He's not here.
Belinda, I need your help.
He lays the girl on the table.
You have to help her. She's turning blue.
I don't know what to do, Caroline. I'm sorry.
You're her only chance right now.
I can't be responsible for Sally's life.
Drew steps closer to her.
This is your destiny, right? This is what God wants from you. You have to believe that, Belinda. I do.
Belinda looks bewildered.
Please. Okay, trouble breathing.
What is it? What's wrong with my baby?
It could be a number of things. If my diagnosis is wrong.
Please, Belinda.
Caroline is crying. Belinda turns to the cabinet as the girl wheezes on the table.
Take it out of her mouth, all right?
Belinda inserts a tongue depressor.
There's an abscess in the area around the tonsils.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It could be Quincy.
Is there some kind of medicine for it?
No. There's only one thing to do. I have to lance her throat.
Then do it!
Caroline, I've never done this procedure before or anything like this.
I'll help you. Whatever I can do. What can I do?
Okay, get the tray and get the mask.
Drew pushes the tray nearer to the table. Belinda gives him a bottle and rag.
Okay, wet this. Put this on her mouth for 5 seconds.
5 seconds.
He holds the mask and rag over Sally's face.
One.
Two.
The girl falls asleep.
We gotta hold her head so she won't move.
Drew takes Sally's head in his hands. She is blue around the mouth.
Dear God, guard my hand.
Caroline scrunches her eyes closed. Belinda begins to operate. A cross hangs on the wall above a bed. Sally is asleep. Caroline sits beside her holding her hand. She smiles at Belinda and mouths the words, "Thank you." Belinda gives her a small smile. Caroline looks down to find Sally opening her eyes. Sally's mouth curves into a smile. Belinda goes out to talk to Drew.
Looks like she'll be fine.
She cleans her tools.
Belinda, what you did...
could have gone the other way. I could have lost your Drew.
But you didn't. You were smart enough to figure out what to do and brave enough to do it.
She turns her head toward him.
I was terrified the whole time.
It didn't stop you.
Dr. Jackson walks into the building.
Oh, Belinda, I have been looking all over for you.
He hangs up his hat and looks at the tools on the table.
What's happened? What is it?
Belinda looks worried.
Belinda saved my daughter's life.
Dr. Jackson's mouth hangs open and he shifts his weight. He checks the child.
All right, open up for me.
Sally opens her mouth.
I bet that throat is really sore, huh? Good excuse for your mama to churn some fresh buttermilk for you.
I sure will.
Caroline smiles at the doctor. He pats the child and then walks toward Belinda. His brow is crinkled, and his mouth is in a straight line.
You know, you saved her life.
But I didn't save Jonas's.
Yes, about that.
He walks closer and looks at her.
I owe you a very big apology. Jonas's death wasn't your fault.
I couldn't hold him still.
But that's not why he died. Jonas was dying when he came to us. We were trying to save him, but unfortunately, the surgery was just too much for him. I told you how difficult it is losing a patient. I've been practicing for 40 years, give or take. That never gets any easier. When it hurts this much, it just means that you care that much more about your patients.
I don't think I'm good enough to be a doctor.
Oh, yes, you are, young lady. You go back to Boston with Mrs. Stafford's mind. But you just make darn sure that you come back here when you're a doctor.
Her eyes are teary.
Well, don't start crying or I'll think I made a mistake after all.
He turns his head and walks away. She watches him and grins. Drew and Belinda stop the wagon outside her house. He turns to Belinda. She kisses his cheek.
That's for having more faith in me than I had in myself.
She jumps down from the wagon. She opens the front door and stops to look back at him. He holds her gaze. She turns and enters the house. He drives the wagon away. Inside, Belinda packs her bags with her mom.
Are you sure you don't want us to see you off the stagecoach?
I'd rather we say goodbye here.
She hands her mom a pile of clothes.
You know, by train, Boston isn't as far as it once seemed.
Mm-hmm.
Are you all right, Belinda?
Yes, Mom, I'm fine.
No second thoughts about leaving with Mrs. Stafford Smythe?
No, not anymore. I feel at peace with my decision.
So your second thoughts are about Drew?
I love him, Mama. I really do. It can never work. Sometimes one dream is all you can have.
Missy's eyes soften. She tilts her head. Drew rides his horse toward the property he owns. Clark looks up from working on the fence.
Whoa. Morning, morning.
Drew dismounts the horse.
I just wanted to say goodbye, Clark. And thank you for everything.
You headed home?
Charles and Sadie are moving on to the farm. I'm headed back to New York tomorrow. I imagine Belinda left.
We said our goodbyes at Missy this morning. She's probably getting on the stage right about now. You asked me once when I knew I loved Marty, but you never asked me what I did about it.
What was that?
She left on a wagon train. She's going back home.
He looks Drew in the eye.
I went after her. Do you love someone? You truly love them. You don't let them go.
Drew nods at him.
I've learned a lot from you, Clark.
What are you doing still standing here? Don't you have a stage to catch?
Drew smiles and moves toward his horse. Belinda is in a stagecoach with Mrs. Stafford Smythe in Windsor. The driver takes his seat.
Last call, Denver stage!
Drew rides in.
All aboard, folks! Last call, Denver stage!
Whoa! Belinda!
She stands up.
Don't go!
They run to each other.
I'll practice in Boston while you're in school, and we'll come back here.
You'd be happy practicing law in Anderson Corner?
Anderson Corner is the place I learned to love the law. And it has you. I don't think I could be truly happy anywhere else.
This isn't your world, Drew.
You're my world.
He drops to one knee.
I love you, Belinda. Marry me.
He holds his hat to his chest. She looks at him in disbelief. She glances back.
Oh, there's a train back to Boston most every day. You'll get one next week. Windsor will meet you at the depot, won't you, Windsor?
He waves at her. Belinda smiles at Drew.
I'd love to marry you, Drew.
He stands and they embrace. She smiles wide. Mrs. Stafford Smythe and Windsor watch them happily. Belinda and her dad walk past a wagon decorated with flowers. She holds a bouquet. They step between two rows of their family and friends. They stop in front of a flowered wedding arch where Drew waits. Father and daughter look at each other. She hands her flowers to a flower girl. Zach places his hands on her shoulders and kisses her cheek. She turns and walks toward Drew and the minister.
Do you, Andrew, take Belinda to be your lawfully wedded wife? To have and to hold, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, forsaking all others, till death do you part?
I do.
And do you, Belinda, take Andrew to be your lawfully wedded husband? To have and to hold, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, forsaking all others, till death do you part?
I do.
They gaze at each other and smile. Her grandparents look on. The minister hands the couple rings. Drew slips a band on her finger. Belinda slips a band on his finger. Her parents look at each other.
I now pronounce you man and wife.
He kisses her family and their friends applaud. Belinda looks into Drew's eyes and smiles. They hug, and he's beaming. Belinda's brother smiles. The couple holds hands. They look at their loved ones. They hug once more. We move further away. The horses are near the fence. The mountains are framed by a clear blue sky. Maddie loads the couple's luggage onto the wagon. Maddie and Drew hug her family members one by one. Her dad kisses her on the cheek.
Bye.
Missy hugs Drew.
Be safe.
He shakes Clark's hand.
Take care, son.
The couple joins hands as they pass behind the wagon to say goodbye to more people.
Bye, Grandpa.
All right, take care, honey.
Belinda gleefully hugs her mom. Drew hugs her brother.
Good?
Party.
He hugs her grandma.
Take care.
He steps back and looks into her eyes.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Drew shakes Zach's hand.
Take care, my girl.
Will do.
Clark helps Belinda into the wagon. Drew hops into the driver's seat.
Ready?
They smile broadly at each other. He takes the reins, and she waves at her family.
Bye.
They wave too.
Get up!
The back of the wagon is filled with their trunks and belongings.
Love you!
The family stands smiling and waving after the couple. Clark looks emotional. Belinda has her hand on Drew's arm as he drives. They share a kiss. The wagon rides toward the mountains.